Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
It's time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and I have on the other line Todd Rosiak, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We have a lot to discuss per usual. It is trade deadline season. We are now up against it. Tuesday, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, is when it's pencils down for general managers across baseball. A lot of trades have already happened, many involving some teams in the Central, the Brewers among them, which of course we will talk about on this podcast. They trade for Carlos Santana earlier in the week, so that is on the docket. Brewers coming off a very, very tough series in Atlanta. The Braves playing like the best team in baseball, which certainly made it difficult. The Brewers, though, It was a bad series. It was a really tough time in Atlanta. The Brewers are going to be returning. They're first going to Washington as the schedule softens up here a little bit. So we'll see what happens going forward. Todd, we're going to start at the trade deadline. Of course, that is the thing that's sort of dominating headlines in baseball. We've seen a lot of moves. The St. Louis Cardinals on Sunday traded Jordan Montgomery and Jordan Hicks to different places. The Brewers themselves have been involved here with the acquisition of Carlos Santana from another member of the division, the Pittsburgh Pirates. So that's probably the biggest story of the week. But as we've gotten closer, I'm curious what more or what level you think the Brewers will be involved here going forward. I think you could easily still point to some holes on their roster. You know, Carlos Santana certainly helps, but you could see why he might just be an appetizer, or you could see how this team is just going to do what it has done, which is to play it kind of conservatively in terms of player acquisition. As we're on the doorstep here, do you think the Brewers will be active based on what you've heard, what you know, or do you think it's going to be, you know, mostly status quo and maybe some little things around the edges?
My guess would be is that there will be another trade or maybe trades consummated by the Brewers. I don't know necessarily that it's going to be anything. These are going to be anything earth-shattering. There's always the potential for that, of course, if the right party comes along and they're able to hammer something out. The Brewers in the past have shown interest in bigger name guys and willingness to part with better prospects or better major league talent if they are able to, if they're not rentals, you know, if the guys have another year of control after, let's say something like that. But barring anything unforeseen on that, in that avenue, I could see them making another kind of Carlos Santana-like move for another bat. Just throwing names out, you know, Jaime Candelario, they're going to be seeing him in Washington starting on Monday. Maybe that'll be another Gio Gonzalez trade. They can send them across the ballpark to the visitors' clubhouse or visitors' dugout. Something along those lines. And the Brewers are always, of course, like many teams in the chase, always looking for additional help in the bullpen. And with Justin Wilson going down right now, I would say that need is probably magnified a little bit more. And I know we'll talk about Wilson in a bit. So in a roundabout way, I will just say that I do expect more movement from the Brewers. It just remains to be seen what type of move it's going to be. As far as the Carlos Santana trade, I can't remember if I had told you this or not, but I know I told a couple other people before, 2 days before that trade was consummated, I did predict the Brewers would end up with Santana. It just wound up being, to me, it made perfect sense. I mean, a guy, veteran, switch hitter, can play first base, helps you against lefties, and you're not going to give up much for him because he's a rental and he's 37 years old. Now, on the flip side, what is he going to give you over those final 2 months? Maybe I'm sure the Brewers are hoping for more than what they got out of Eduardo Escobar, let's say, from a couple years ago. That was a I think a well-designed trade that didn't pan out because Escobar didn't really play that well down the stretch. But maybe Santana's got some black magic in that bat, so to speak, and can figure something out. I know he did hit a homer today against the Braves. And the Brewers did put some offense up against those guys in that series, but wow, what a scary team those guys are, Atlanta.
Yeah, Santana, like you said, homered on Sunday. So in his second game as a Milwaukee Brewer, he contributes there. Defensively, at least if you consult the fielding Bible, he's actually quite good. He's actually the best among first basemen in terms of defensive runs saved. Now, I'm sure there are many different metrics out there that'll tell you about defense. I don't know if they all necessarily agree that he is a way above average first baseman, but he's not going to hurt you on defense, even at 37 years old. So that I'm sure factors into it. And I know this Brewers team really values defense, and I know it because they've told us, but also just watch how much playing time they've given to Bryce Terang and Joey Weimer, Blake Perkins for that matter, guys who are really pretty elite defenders who have not done anything offensively, or at least not done enough offensively. And so as I look around the diamond and I try to figure out where they're going to still upgrade, it sounds like nonsense for me to say I don't really know the exact spot, but I just look around and know that the Brewers, like those guys that I just mentioned, they're going to be really hesitant to try and find a replacement for those guys. You're obviously not replacing Willy Adames, as much as he has struggled on offense. He is still an elite defender. Third base is an obvious one because it's kind of a rotating wheel, but now you've got Brian Anderson due back soon. Luis Arias has played very well at AAA, so it seems like they do have a lot of options there. And I don't know if it's corner outfield with Sal Frelick here now doing what he's been doing, and Christian Yelich on the other side. DH is the obvious one, but you can kind of put whoever at DH. I don't know if this team is going to want to put resources toward acquiring straight up a DH. There's obviously Keston Hiura. There's a lot of options. So all that is to ask you, Todd, if they do add somebody else offensively, where do you think that's going to be? I mean, you could pick any of those spots, but I don't know what's likely based on what I know the Brewers value in terms of defense and the guys that they already have right now.
I had this discussion with Adam McAlvey last week, and my response was, they don't, they're not going to acquire another catcher, a starting frontline catcher. You're set in left field. You're set at shortstop. Willy Adames' offensive struggles aside, he's a darn good defensive shortstop. Otherwise, if you can get a bat at any of those other positions that I didn't list, go and get it and make it work. Somehow figure out a way to make it work. You're talking about 2 months, you're talking about making a playoff push. This is a time when guys have to kind of put their egos aside, do what's best for the team. Again, Matt Arnold, I would assume, is going to whatever trade he does consummate, if he does, look for a guy that can help them defensively as well. You're probably not going to have as good. The luck isn't going to be as good as far as picking up a guy like Santana, who's tops at his position, but a guy who at least is going to more than hold his own at that spot. You pick a guy up and you make it work, be it a center fielder, be it a right fielder. You've got more pressing needs probably. It's second base, third base, offensively. You find a way. Nobody thought in 2018 that Mike Moustakas was going to be a fit. And what did the Brewers do? They moved Travis Shaw to second. They made it work. The Jonathan Scope trade, obviously that didn't work out, but that was more of that outside the box thinking, just trying to pick up more talent, trying to pick up more offense. I think that's probably the way they're looking at it again right now. You have to be creative when you don't have a ton of money to spend and a ton of prospect capital that you want to part with. So, my take is just get what you can get and figure it out later.
Santana, like I said, homered Sunday. He's certainly a fit. His numbers offensively, not overwhelming. Peripherally, if you look at the numbers, it's probably looking at an average bat to maybe even slightly below. He doesn't make as hard a contact as he used to, but Brewers fans have seen now a couple hard hit balls, the one against Atlanta on Sunday, and then earlier this year when he hit that 3-run walk-off off Matt Busch in Pittsburgh with the celebratory dance to follow. Very memorable moment. Now he will, all his future home runs, at least this season, will be with the Milwaukee Brewers. A couple guys that the Brewers subtracted this week, put them on injured list specifically. specifically, designated hitter Jesse Winker, starting pitcher Julio Teheran. Both of these guys, I don't want to be cynical about injuries, because I do feel like most of the time when fans assume there's like a phantom injury where a player is just playing very poorly, so he ends up on the IL, most of the time there is at least something that you can actually point to. It's actually the reason why they need to be, you know, held out of game action in the first place. They're not performing because they're actually hurt. I don't know if that's the case with Jesse Winker or Julio Teheran. It's certainly, you know, my first thought was, okay, yeah, they're trying to keep him around for a little bit longer, but those guys haven't been effective enough to stay on the big league roster. I think certainly in Winker's case, they're going to try to find somebody else to be designated hitter rest of the year. I don't know if they're going to need Julio Teheran if, you know, all things, assuming good health to Wade Miley and Brandon Woodruff going forward, they're going to have some guys who are able to fill spots on the rotation. What is the future of either one of these guys with the Milwaukee Brewers? Do you envision that these guys play again this season? Or do you think that, I mean, maybe there's even a future beyond this season. I don't even know about that. I'm not even thinking about that. But it felt like an endpoint to me for these guys this week, especially after Teheran really, really struggled on Saturday. But that might be jumping the gun. I don't know. Where do you think this stands with those guys?
Barring anything really bad with Teheran, with his hip injury, I fully expect him to be back in some sort of way, shape, or form by the end of the season and contributing in some way. Yeah, he did get lit up bad on Sunday or Saturday, I'm sorry, against the Braves, but he started against them the time before that and had a really good start. And I know that the current streak really since the All-Star break, maybe a little bit before, has not been great, but I do believe that the Brewers believe in him and that they can utilize him in some way, shape, or form moving forward. As far as Jesse Winker goes, would not surprise me in the least if the Brewers are able to pick up another bat, particularly somebody that they feel that they can utilize more regularly in the DH spot, that he might be the odd man out. He's seemingly just kind of done enough over the course of the year to just when you think he's probably going to get cut loose, he staves off execution for another day or another week with a big hit or a big RBI or something like that. Still only has the one home run, but we're talking about a guy who is struggling to stay above the Mendoza line. He can't play him in the field and he can't run. Enough said.
Yeah, we've said this before. His time on this roster lasted much longer than I would have thought. You know, like the whole month of July really is a surprise to me that he's here. Everybody loves him in the clubhouse. We know he's got a track record. It has not worked. I can't imagine he plays anymore for the Brewers this year. I hear what you're saying about Teheran. It'd be surprising to me if he had more one more opportunity this season as well. But I will take your knowledge on that. It certainly supersedes mine, so that is interesting to me. One guy who went on the IL went clearly with an injury, and that's Justin Wilson. A bad, bad break for Wilson especially, but also the Brewers, where he's warming up. He's about to make his season debut coming off of Tommy John surgery. He's been activated. He is warming up in the bullpen, getting ready to come in the game in Atlanta. Something goes wrong, feels discomfort. Looked like he was in actually kind of quite a bit of pain. He's back on the injured list. It looks significant. It's hard to imagine him now pitching for the Brewers this season. I have no idea. You know, we don't know the severity. We don't know if it's related to the injury he's just finished rehabbing from. But I it's a big deal, Todd, because I really was starting to get the impression that maybe they wouldn't have to add to the bullpen, as has been their MO, with Justin Wilson coming in, with Woodruff and Miley getting healthy. You know, at some point you're like, okay, well, there's a lot of arms now. You can move Teheran to the bullpen, or you can move Adrian Hauser back to the bullpen. Like, suddenly the need is reduced. But with him going back, you know, getting hurt, especially as one of the few left-handers they have, it makes me think that they're going to have to be more active on that front as well. And just a terrible break. The Brewers now, that's 2 years now that they brought in a pitcher with Trevor Rosenthal, traded for last year, that hasn't been able to play at all, you know, coming off an injury history, then just stayed injured or got injured again. The Brewers are a little bit snake bitten here in this regard, but I don't know if you even, I know you weren't in Atlanta, so I don't know if you got to talk to Justin Wilson beforehand, but this is, I don't know, man, this just really sucks. This is it's really tough to see something like this happen.
Yeah, you never want to see a guy get hurt, first of all, but second of all, a guy who, you know, by all accounts, busted his butt to get back from a Tommy John surgery and, you know, takes him over a year to do so at an advanced age. You know, he doesn't have a lot of years left in his career. This is a guy that's been really good and really did fit a need for the Brewers at this point. You know, lefty, like you mentioned, a guy with a ton of postseason experience, a ton of experience pitching in big games down the stretch. You know, the Brewers bullpen does not really have a lot of that aside from Devin Williams to this point. So, yeah, I would think definitely, like I said before, the Brewers are looking to, you know, add in the bullpen. Maybe the need for a lefty becomes a little bit more acute at this point, but it also will depend, of course, on how serious the injury is. So, you know, we have seen instances in the past where things look really bad and they wind up being, you know, a month or something like that. Of course, then we're, you know, we're talking about getting toward the end of the season at that point. So it's really hard to guess, but, you know, there's never a good time for an injury, but with Justin Wilson going down at this point, literally like one pitch before he's supposed to go in the game for his Brewers debut, is that's about as brutal as it gets.
This series in Atlanta in general was pretty bad for the Brewers. Brewers starting pitching. They Tehran was, he gave up six runs in the first on Saturday. Colin Ray was better on Sunday, but for the most part, you know, gave up a couple long balls that were really damaging. And then on Friday night, it was Adrian Hauser who wasn't able to keep the Braves off the board. Five times in this series, the Brewers had the lead, took the lead in the top half of an inning, and gave the lead back in all five situations in the bottom half of the inning. There was obviously some bad bullpen pitching too, but I think if you want to look at this series, you can find a way to sort of brush it off and say, first of all, yes, Atlanta's amazing, and second of all, the bats woke up. You know, the offense was finally doing something. The Braves weren't throwing their top line pitchers either, but you can safely argue the Brewers guys who pitched are probably not guys who are going to start games in the playoffs. So you could feel like, yes, this was a playoff battle, but the Brewers have different arms that they would throw in some of these situations. But also, it was just really, really humbling, and it sort of makes me question their depth the rest of the way. It feels like their starting pitching depth is hitting maybe hitting a little bit of a wall where you really need some of these guys to come back to fortify what you've got. And I've asked this question a few different ways over the course of the season, but we know the Braves are good. We know they're the best team in baseball. Now, they came into the series losers of 8 of 12. They're human, but they look like the best team in baseball, bar none. Are the Brewers good? They're 8 games above 500. They're still in a playoff spot. They're right there with Cincinnati. They're down a half game now in the central standings, but basically they're tied in the loss column. They could easily still win this division. They've got soft schedule coming up. Do we think this is a division championship team? I mean, I still don't have an answer to that. I know the division is weak, so that's kind of what I always fall back on. But at some point, you just got to say, is this team good? I don't know the answer to that, Todd. How do you feel about this Milwaukee Brewers team after seeing them in Atlanta?
I mean, absolutely, they're a good team. I don't even know why the question is being asked, frankly. I don't know what, you know, what angle you're coming at it from, but, you know, they were in first place. They're right outside of first place at this point in the Central Division. There's that argument out there that, yes, the Central is weaker than it has been in past years. You know, they swept a really good Reds team last time they were in town. Won 9 games from them overall, I believe. 10 games, actually.
Yeah, 10-3. Yep.
10 out of 13. A really offensively talented team. They still have quite a few games remaining against the Cubs, the other team that's still kind of in the hunt. But for all the challenges that this team is in adversity, that this team has overcome this season, all the injuries, the underperformance by guys who are expected to be key contributors like Rowdy Tellez, Luis Urias among them, chief among them, to be where they're at is incredible. It's amazing. And I think it speaks, number one, to the guy in the dugout pushing the buttons, Craig Counsell, who I think has really done a masterful job. And it speaks to just the depth in the organization of talent that they've been able to acquire. You know, we can laugh at guys like Andrew Monasterio hitting cleanup, but you know they're not tearing the cover off the ball. They're not hitting the ball over the fence regularly. But it's a guy that was hitting close to 300 coming into Sunday. I didn't even see what he did today. You know, they're getting contributions up and down the lineup from guys that you really didn't expect coming into the season. And to me, that's the sign of a good team, and a sign that didn't pull up stakes, you know, pull down the tent when things started going bad. And when you start losing all these horses, they didn't go in the tank. They just kept fighting. They kept playing, and they've kept themselves in position. It's what I've said for 2 months. You've got to keep yourself within striking distance for when the big dogs come back. And now the big dogs are on the verge of coming back. You have a couple days left to see what they do at the trade deadline. If you add another bat, a bullpen arm, then you're talking. But, to be in the position they're at, when you look at what they're rolling out in that lineup every day, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine in that lineup, it really is amazing. So to me, yes, they are a good team. They're a very good team.
Yeah, we don't talk enough about Chris Hook. I mean, we do, but not enough. Like, I don't know how they have done it with this pitching staff, and even the bullpen to a degree, because they've gotten so much out of Yoel Piamp and Elvis Peguero, who are wildly unheralded. Hobie Milner, you could add him too. I mean, the bullpen's been great. The starting pitching, like, I don't know if you could have told me this is the starters that they'd be relying on for so much of the year and expect them to be in first place on August 1st, right at the trade deadline. That would blow my mind. So I don't know how they're doing it. It's magic. The defense is obviously elite, and that's certainly been leading the way. And here they are, still tied in the loss column, although this weekend does take them out of first place. Curious what you think of the Chicago Cubs, because for the longest time now, it's been the Reds and the Brewers and the two-horse race, the Cardinals waving the white flag with some of the trades they made. There's another thing you couldn't have convinced me of on on April 1st, that we would be in this position with the St. Louis Cardinals. The Cubs, though, are now 3.5 back of first place, or I think it's probably four back now that Cincinnati has leapfrogged Milwaukee, and the Cubs did finally lose for the first time in 9 games on Sunday. But Chicago has always been a little interesting because they do have an offense, they have a positive run differential, well above zero on that front, which makes them unique in the NL Central. They have some guys too. Like, I don't know, similar to the Brewers. If you told me this lineup, I'm not sure I could be convinced that that is a playoff caliber team. But again, they're scratching it together and putting it together, and they are a team now that's definitely on the move. When you look at the NL Central, do you see the Cubs as a problem, or do you look ahead at their really tough schedule and say, yeah, give me a couple more weeks with the Cubs before I can really commit to them as a contender here?
Yeah, I don't. Without, I'm going to use the caveat of I haven't been paying a lot of attention to them other than where, where they are on the in the standings and everything. Just knowing what I know about their lineup, knowing what I know about their pitching, to me they're a team that is on a hot streak right now. Is it sustainable? Unless they make some moves, probably not over the long term. They got a couple of really good starting pitchers, but. As far as I'm aware, their bullpen is not the greatest. Their offense has been kind of inconsistent. They announced that they're not going to trade Cody Bellinger, so that leaves a potent bat in the lineup for them and a guy that's capable of going off individually from time to time. But when you look at the lineups, you look at what each team rolls out every day, to me, the Reds remain much, much scarier. And I think they're also much more motivated to be aggressive at the deadline, and they do have the prospects, to do so if they choose to be. They may also decide that, this is kind of a bonus run that we didn't expect, and we'll be judicious in what we do trade to try to add and see where we go because we don't want to mortgage the future. Of considering the lean years that they've had over the last 4, 5, 6 years, and in that rebuild, that's kind of the case study for what the Brewers don't want to have happen ever. The fans don't like that bite to the apple analogy, but that the Red situation is really kind of the model for that. We don't want to be that. That's what we mean by bites to the apple. So to me, the Reds are the team that you absolutely need to fear the rest of the way. Who knows what Ellie does? Maybe he goes crazy. To me, the Reds do need some more pitching. They could probably bolster themselves in the bullpen a little bit. Another starting pitcher. I'm not quite sure when Hunter Green's supposed to be back, but the guys that they do have right now have been pitching really well, and they're getting contributions from guys that really we haven't heard of. Ben Lively, for one. I mean, come on, like nobody ever heard of that guy before this year, and he's pitched really, really well. So it's going to be interesting to see once all the dust clears here on Tuesday, who winds up with what?
Yeah, Tuesday is going to be a fascinating day on so many levels, as always. The Reds, like you said, lost 10 of 13 to the Brewers, but beaten everybody else for some reason. They went and took 2 of 3 from the Dodgers again this weekend. They are They just don't go away, man. The Reds are really, really good, even though they haven't shown it head to head against Milwaukee. Those two teams will not meet again this season. So we're just gonna have to scoreboard watch if we want to know what the Reds are up to. Last one before we get to three up, three down. I think I am gonna be really fascinated to know who the designated hitter is for this team once the dust clears, as you said, and August 1st is come and gone. Kurt and I have talked a lot about Keston Hira, and it's kind of, I think, an object of fascination for both of us why he hasn't been brought up yet as a designated hitter option. And I know, I mean, his defense isn't good. I think it would, you know, it certainly would be a net negative if you were able to put him at first base if that's where you had him. But as a DH, the way he's hit at AAA, the way he hit, frankly, in the big leagues last year, even though he struck out a ton, you could argue he'd still be a pretty effective hitter if that version of Keston Hira were here. So I don't know if he gets traded. I don't know if he gets brought up in the aftermath of moves that are made. I don't know if he's going to play again for the Milwaukee Brewers. I truly have no sense still, and on July 31st, what's happening with Keston Hira. So I'm curious your take on it. A third party, besides Kurt and I, we've spent way too much time talking about him. What do you think, what do you see in the future for Keston Hira?
If I had to put some money on it, I would guess that once the season's over, he and the Brewers will part ways. I don't think he'll be brought back. I think if the Brewers were going to call him up, they would have already called him up. You mentioned it. The defense is a killer. I know he can play DH as well, but, we've seen what's happened with Keston Hira repeatedly when he mashes at AAA, comes up to the majors. It's just kind of the same thing. Yes, he does give you that homer potential. He does give you the potential with a big hit from time to time, but it's high strikeout rate. It's really, homer or bust with him. And they've got guys that can do that already. And I think from their standpoint, they've kind of seen what they expected to see from him. They know what they've got in him. And if a move was going to be made, it would have already been made. So, maybe he winds up getting thrown in a deal, a trade somewhere. Maybe somebody would be interested in him for the stretch run. I'm really not sure, but it's just been a kind of a fascinating journey of his through the course of his career with the Brewers, from just can't miss, tremendous prospect, to a guy that just can't do anything, it seems like, to get called back up to the big leagues, and a whole bunch of craziness in between, position changes and so forth, the league adjusting to him not adjusting back. It's been a wild ride, but I think it's pretty safe to say at this point that it didn't work, and he's still too young to pull the plug on him. I would hope he would get another opportunity somewhere, but to me, he's definitely a change of scenery kind of guy. Would probably do him best.
Yeah, I'm still stuck on that 115 OPS plus last year. He was good. He was good in 2022 with the Brewers. Not so much in 2021, and the strikeouts were still unquestionably very high last year. They tried him all sorts. They tried him in left field, tried him any number of ways to get him in the lineup, and it wasn't working defensively. But I don't know. I am still fascinated, like you said here, with what comes next for him. All right, let's go into some of the more granular details from the week. There were a lot of cool highlights this week. Let's go to three up, three down. Todd, I'm going to start with some outfield defense. In fact, first batter of the week back on Monday. This game kind of fades from memory after the Braves series, but this was a wild one, a 3-2 walk-off win for the Brewers, and it opened up with Ellie De La Cruz hitting a shot to the wall in center and Joey Weimer stealing the home run away. It was a great play, kicked off the game with a bang. Of course, the scoreboard crew in Milwaukee went a little bit viral, got up on SportsCenter because they, as they do with their tongue-in-cheek trivia mentioned, said something to the effect of almost hit a home run in the first inning, but didn't when De La Cruz came to bat next time up. And this time he hit a home run that you could see the trivia nugget on the scoreboard as the ball left the stadium at American Family Field, like went out the windows out the back in right center. Truly a majestic blast and some fun with the scoreboard team, which responded a couple times over the course of the next couple days. It was a fun time. But, Ellie De La Cruz, still very exciting, but Joey Weimer showing a little bit of flash on his own right, stealing that home run away. Very nice stuff. And then, Christian Yelich walks it off later that night with a single, really uplifting 3-2 win on Monday.
Well, you mentioned home runs by young guys. Sal Frelick hit his first major league dinger. And kind of a fun little interesting story I was able to glean after the fact. They had to do a bunch of investigating to find out where the ball landed, who actually caught the ball, and it was a group of a few guys, one of which who actually had played with Frelick on some travel ball team years ago, and they wound up just giving the ball back for nothing. Most of the times, especially when they're the first, first hit, first major league homer or whatever, balls, if they wind up in the stands, can sometimes be held hostage. And the guy that had possession of the ball was happy to give it back for nothing, made a request to just say hi to Sal and take a picture with him. And Sal came out and did so happily, willingly, and of his own accord gave the guy a bat, a pair of batting gloves, and an autographed ball as a thank you for his home run ball. So good on Sal for doing that, and he's got a pretty cool mantelpiece now for himself.
I did ask him a little bit about that in my interview that follows this discussion for this week's edition of the podcast. He did not go into that level of detail. I didn't know that the fan. I knew he was from Boston or Worcester, I think, but did not. I did not know he had played with him or at least crossed paths with him. So that's very wild. That's very cool. What a week for him again. I mean, a great play in Atlanta in right field, a kind of a circus catch or a leaping catch, not a circus catch, just a great catch, and getting on base a ton. He's hitting cleanup. Like he's been awesome for them. Has had a nice first full week in the big leagues. For my number two, I'm gonna go to a game that I went and personally saw in Appleton at the was stadium, Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. I believe that's Neuroscience Group Field at Fox City Stadium. Brandon Woodruff throwing his second rehab appearance. He went four innings that night and is one step closer to getting back to the big leagues. He is gonna have another appearance with AAA Nashville coming up this week. After that, you know, 1 week into August, we could see Brandon Woodruff on a big league mound again, which would be a huge shot to the arm. No one needs to be told that. That is a monstrous development if they are able to get him back. One thing I really enjoyed about this game that I went to see was the production that the Cedar Rapids Colonels got from Noah Miller, the younger brother of Owen Miller. Of course, that is Brandon Woodruff's Brewers teammate. Noah Miller is a pretty highly regarded prospect in the Twins organization. He had a phenomenal night. He got a RBI single against Woodruff. No offense to Robert Moore, who had a great night in his own right, but this should have been an error. It was a single. That's fine. RBI single. Then Noah Miller later has an RBI double to tie the game. And in the top of the 10th, because it went to extras, he hits a go-ahead single to give the Colonels a 3-2 lead. Now, Robert Moore, that second baseman, came back and he'd also homered in the game. He ends up hitting a two-out, two-run single in the end to win the game 4-3. Very exciting finish. But the big story for the Brewers is Brandon Woodruff back in the saddle, or at least very close to it. That is huge news.
I'm gonna stick with long balls here, home runs, and Christian Yelich hit another one on Sunday against the Braves. Just got it over the fence, opposite field, left field at Truist Park, and that was number 16 for him. So he's one away from tying Willy Adames for the team lead in that category this season. And with roughly 2 months of the season left, I had been saying for the years since he injured himself, 2019, the runner-up MVP season, and the subsequent pandemic year where things just really went south in a hurry for him. A good jumping off point, a good kind of litmus test or a good measuring stick to say, the Brewers are going to be happy with the performance they got out of Christian Yelich, and Christian Yelich looks like he's really turned the corner. Long term for the good would be put up a season at least where you can match it with what he did in his final years in Miami. So let's say hitting 280, 20 homers, 80 RBI, something like that. And if you look at his numbers right now, 286 average, 16 homers, 59 RBI, 22 stolen bases. He's right in line with that. And who knows what the last, like I said, the last couple months are going to hold for him. Maybe gets on another one of those real hot streaks, but of all the negativity and all the bad stuff that's happened with the Brewers and especially with their offense this year, it's been really cool to see him have turned it around the way he has and just sustained it over the course of, we're really talking 2.5 months right now at this point, even longer. And I wouldn't say he's back to the Christian Yelich of 2008, the second half of 2018 and all of 2019. still not driving the ball with regularity in the air, but swinging with authority, hitting the ball hard consistently, getting it in the air more, getting it in the gaps, and getting on base at a tremendous clip. 849 OPS is definitely nothing to nothing to shake a stick at, and just very positive signs from him all across the board. If they can get Carlos Santana hot, add another bat behind him, who knows what can happen moving forward. But kudos to Christian Yelich for what's been a tremendous comeback season for him.
There's only one Marlins season that really outperforms what he's doing right now, and he's still on an upswing. He started out kind of cold and has been just white hot here over the last 2 months at this point. So who knows where this goes? It's not going to go, like you said, 18, 19, but it's, it could be next. It could be his next best season, the way that this is trending, and it's been obviously a huge boost. He is far and away their best hitter. I want to close it down with Freddy Peralta, 13 strikeouts. Ties a career high. That was on Wednesday against the Cincinnati Reds. He only threw 6 innings. He got pulled after six, but 13 Ks, tying his major league debut, which a lot of people remember, in Colorado against the Rockies. He didn't even go the full six in that game. It was a wild outing with his family there. That was a very, one of the more memorable major league debuts, I think, in Brewers history. But here he is matching that and looking really, really powerful. This is 2 out of 3 starts now, that both against the Reds, where he's looked spectacular. Had no hit level stuff, and I still think, there's still a major inconsistency issue there with him, and he still gives up. The long ball has really bitten him this year, but a 3-0 win on that day, really exciting to see Freddy Peralta kind of matching what his ceiling is, I guess. So that is the third of my 3 up, 3 down. What do you got to close it down?
Jackson Chourio apparently has been playing pretty well in Biloxi. And hats off to him. I just hit another homer Sunday. He's got 16 for the season. I'm looking at a tweet from Minor League Baseball right now. While that game was still going on, Jackson Chourio, the youngest player in the Southern League, but leading the league with 102 hits and second with 67 RBI. For a guy that got off to a pretty slow start this season, and some people were kind of naysaying and questioning whether he really deserved that top prospect status that he had. I would say he's answered those critics and then some this season. Just tremendously impressive performance by that young guy. And really, you look at the top three prospects on that Shuckers team, not only Jackson Chourio, but also Tyler Black is having an outstanding season. Most importantly for him, he stayed healthy all year. That was kind of an issue for him since he had been drafted. That was a little snake bit in that area. And also Jefferson Caro having a tremendous season behind the plate as well, both offensively and defensively. So, these are future Brewers and probably not too far into the future. It's crazy to think about that, but could the Brewers push Chourio to Triple-A Nashville this season? I think that's definitely within the realm of possibility here down the stretch, and just kind of see, give him a taste of it, see how he does, like they did last year when they sent him from Wisconsin to Biloxi for the last few games of the season. I think Jackson Chourio gets his name in the mix, potentially making his big league debut next season, and that is tremendously exciting for obviously the player, but also for the organization, who has not had a prospect like this guy in a long, long time.
Yeah, he's raised his OPS over 110 points since July started. It's just been crazy how good he has been for Biloxi, and I absolutely think we're going to have to discuss him as a guy who makes the opening day roster in 2024. I don't know if it's quite going to happen, but at least it's going to be a conversation, because he is just absolutely mashed. He's been everything you'd hope a top prospect would be after, yes, he started slow, and you kind of figured, well, that's natural, it's non-linear, you don't know, and then all of a sudden he's just right back to being a dominant force despite being far and away the youngest guy at that level. Extremely exciting stuff from Chourio. A few things we did not discuss on 3 Up, 3 Down that we probably could have. Jesse Winker, on the day that Craig Counsell sort of revealed that we would see less of him in the starting lineup, that his role would be reduced, comes in off the bench and has a single on one pitch that he sees, first pitch he sees, to help the Brewers in that ninth inning rally where they come back and win, or don't recall if it was a comeback exactly, but they beat Cincinnati 3-2 on Christian Yelich's walk-off. Winker was a big part of that rally. Winker now on the IL, but maybe that was a a nice final grace note, if nothing else, to what has been a tumultuous season. William Contreras, 2 hits in all 3 games against his former team, the Braves. Contreras continues to be a star on this team. He has been just everything they could have hoped for, and having a great offensive season, as well as defensive. Blake Perkins throws out Orlando Arcia, trying to stretch from first to third on a single. That was kind of an exciting play on Sunday. And yeah, I think that does it. Brewers almost won that game Tuesday night against the Reds. The one they lost, Christian Yelich had another home run in that one, a 3-run homer to make it 4-3 late. Brewers mounted a couple more runners on base before finally the Reds were able to get out of that. They've been able to get to closer Alexis Diaz a little bit, and that was kind of an exciting finish. Didn't end well, but still some life from the Brewers. Okay, let's go back in time real quickly. Not far back in time either. It's this week's Remember When. So Todd, I was thinking about Woodruff, and I guess unfortunately thinking about what happened to Justin Wilson, where he wasn't able to even come into the game. So I'm going to flash back just a few years to 2017, June 13th, 2017. The last time I can remember a Brewers player who was all set to make a debut, in this case, Brandon Woodruff's major league debut, and did not make it out of the bullpen. This was at Busch Stadium. It was a doubleheader. The Brewers were in town for a doubleheader, and Woodruff pulled his hamstring in the bullpen, right hamstring tightness while he was warming up. So he was not able, after being called up that day, not able to appear in the game. Brent Suter had been brought up as a 26th man for the doubleheader. He winds up having to start and throwing, I think he almost threw 5 innings, like 4 2/3, gave up 3 runs, was actually really good in the early going. Brewers got beat pretty good in that game eventually. I think it was 6-0. The Brewers just didn't get anything going. Cardinals were able to add on to some runs at the bullpen. Woodruff spends a month on the DL, 52 days before he can actually make his major league debut. And then that happens in Tampa Bay. He gets the start later in the year in August 3rd, August 4th. I think it was August 4th. Tampa Bay Rays, 6 1/3 shutout innings. Brewers win that game 2-0. A pretty nice career was just getting started for Brandon Woodruff. Of course, he did a lot of bullpen work. A lot of people remember what he did in 2018 in the playoffs and down the stretch in 2019 when he kind of emerged as their ace. But he was pretty good in his major league debut. I think he retired 9 of his final 10 against the Rays. Woodruff hadn't been very good at AAA. That was when it was Colorado Springs, and he had a 4.46 ERA at Colorado Springs, which is the worst possible place to pitch, so that's totally understandable. I think that same day, I'm pretty sure it was Orlando Arcia, speaking of guys we saw this week. I think that was his 23rd birthday, the day Woodruff pitched. He had a triple homer and a single. He scored both the runs, made a big defensive play, and Orlando Arcia now still having a really nice year with Atlanta. Brewers were really snake bit with injuries that year. We think this year is bad. That was the year Woodruff couldn't get out of the bullpen. Junior Guerra, who was their opening day starter, got hurt laying down a bunt and missed a bunch of time and became very ineffective. Chase Anderson got hurt swinging the bat, and this was all before Jimmy Nelson famously got hurt diving back into a base, a shoulder injury that I think ultimately really just dramatically short-circuited his career. Matt Garza couldn't get out, like his last spring training start strained a groin or something. It was just a very bad year. 2017 was kind of a mess. Brewers still were very much in the race right down to the bitter end there before making the playoffs in 2018. Okay, that's our look back in time. Let's finish strong in the present. It is Todd's take of the week.
Ryan Braun sends it for center and deep.
My take of the week, trade deadline.
Let's go.
It's going to be exciting. It's going to be thrilling.
I can hear it in your voice.
It's going to be amazing. I'll just reiterate what I had said before, that I do expect the Brewers to do something. What it will be, we shall see. But I just think that they feel like they are too close. Matt Arnold, understanding what a boost a trade or potentially a couple trades aside from the Santana thing that they've already pulled off would do for a team that has really been scrapping and hustling and playing hard, right in the mix. We don't know what the Reds are going to do, obviously. We don't know what the Cubs are going to do, but all the Brewers have is control over themselves. And if they can pull the right levers, push the right buttons, maybe they can go ahead and win that division, because when it's all said and done, that's the ultimate goal. And then just to get into the dance, so to speak. And we'll see what happens after that. But whoever does this podcast next week with you, well, you guys will have all kinds of stuff to talk about who they got, who they didn't get, what they should have done. Yeah, for another week.
That seems to imply that you don't think there's going to be an emergency podcast on Tuesday, Todd, where we break down all of the flurry of moves that they made.
Oh, well, there very well could be.
Yeah.
There very well could be. And I won't be on it, so.
No, probably not. It's just so important to remember there is just such a ceiling to what a midseason acquisition, or particularly a trade deadline acquisition, can do. Even really good players. I mean, Eduardo Escobar gets remembered as not really providing much. I mean, he had an 800 OPS, which isn't terrible. It's actually fine. But he didn't make an impact because it's really, really hard to have that level of impact. And I would say, you look at the standings in the NL, there are basically six teams that all have the same record. It's the Reds, it's the Brewers, the Giants, the Diamondbacks, the Phillies, the Marlins. They are all right there. Four of them are going to be playoff teams unless the Cubs invite themselves to the party. It's one game is going to make a difference. You know, a player, a half a win player is going to make a difference. So that you have to take that into consideration too. I don't know where that leaves you. I don't know if that's informative at all, but it's just, that's kind of where they're at. It's not going to make a huge difference, but it might make the difference. And that's, you know, that's just what you gotta deal with if you're the general manager. Todd, I think that's all we have, man. I can move into my interview with Sal Frelick. Any last thoughts though, before I let you go?
I guess I can go back to the to the Brandon Woodruff stuff, you know, talking about that pulled hamstring. I actually covered that. It was a doubleheader in St. Louis, and it was just miserably, miserably hot and humid. It was terrible. And just remember kind of the, like, what is going on feeling, and why is he coming off the field? And then we find out that he's not going to be pitching, and then Brent Suter's going to pitch. We actually got to talk to Woodruff in the clubhouse before that game that he was supposed to pitch. And he had the kind of that aw shucks look, and like, I can't believe this just happened. I felt really bad for him. You know, it was supposed to be an exciting time and turned out to not be so exciting just a bunch of time. But then I did cover that game in Tampa too, where he made his debut and shoved, he pitched tremendous. So it was, I was able to see both debuts, if you want to call them that, for Brandon Woodruff, and above and beyond all that, you know, regardless of what happens with Brandon Woodruff in the future, whether he remains the Brewers or not, you know, I've been doing this job for a long time. I've interviewed who knows how many guys over the years, and Brandon Woodruff, top five for me, just quality individual, quality human, class act all the way around, and definitely root for his success wherever he goes and whatever he does, because he's a good one.
Yeah, I agree with you. One of my favorites on this team and on the last several Brewers teams, and he's going to be a welcome sight back on that mound, because he was awesome in two starts this year. They could certainly use him if he's fully healthy. Tremendous dude, and you definitely like to see him getting back to full strength and getting this team back to full strength. That'll do it for this edition of Microbrew. Again, now though, before we completely send you away, I've got this interview with Sal Frelick. He is the man of the hour this week, these last 10 days with the Milwaukee Brewers, and wanted to chat with him about his hot start, but also just a little bit about his background. So caught up with him for a little bit. Todd, thank you for joining me this week, man. I will chat with you again very soon.
JR, I can't wait, and it's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Here he is, Sal Frelick. Thanks for tuning into Microbrew, everybody. We'll be back with you again very soon. Bye-bye. My guest is Sal Frelick, Brewers outfielder. New Brewers outfielder. He, of course, is taking the whole thing by storm with a great start to his major league career. But I'm going to start. We're going to go back to your high school days. Have you seen the viral clip of your football highlights again since you've been up to the major leagues? Because that thing was circulating pretty widely. I think people kind of knew that you were a football player, but holy smokes, dude. Do you get a chance to catch that every once in a while?
No, I haven't seen him in a little bit. I'll usually come across him like during football season in the fall when I kind of get that itch to get the pads back on, like most high school football players trying to hold on to their dreams still do. But yeah, no, I hadn't seen it.
I think, what is it, 1,940 rushing yards, 1,700 passing yards, something like that. I might have that combination wrong, but very highly regarded football player. And I know Boston College, there was a chance you were going to go that route or maybe try both. I don't know how those conversations went. My understanding is a baseball coach said, look, you're a baseball player, you got to follow that. How did those conversations work out?
Yeah. I had played hockey, baseball, and football all the way through high school, and it was never like I'm going to stick to one because this is the one I want to do later. I didn't really know. I was just playing all three because I loved all three, and I had committed to BC for baseball after my freshman year of high school, and that didn't mean I wanted to close the door in football, and BC had then offered me, I think it was after my junior year, and I was all in on going to play both, but I had to have some hard conversations with, you know, my coaches, especially in the baseball realm. Yeah. My BC coach, Coach Gambino, was like, hey, man, listen, like, I think you're a baseball player. I think that's what you're going to do after college. Like, I think the route for you is to come and just play baseball. And I wasn't really sure at first, but I ended up choosing that, and luckily it worked out.
Yeah. Would they let you play quarterback? Is that what they were recruiting you for?
No. No, it was athlete, so sure. Kick returner, punt returner, slot.
Sure, sure. All right. Well, another athlete who is known for kind of his multi-sport success in your neck of the woods is Pat Connaughton, Milwaukee Bucks guard. I think you got to meet him in Wisconsin when you were playing with the Timber Rattlers. I don't know if you know him well or if there's like a legacy where you grew up. I don't know how close exactly his high school was to yours. I think it's like a half hour away or something like that. So did you get a chance to meet him and like really get to know him at all?
Yeah, I mean, so Pat's a little older than me, but he grew up in the town next to me in Arlington. I'm from Lexington, and I actually went to Catholic school in Arlington growing up. And every day after school, I remember going to Fidelity House, playing basketball there. I'd see him. He'd be there running camps. And I always, you know, used to look up to him. He was the guy. I followed his career when he was at Notre Dame, too. And I hadn't met him, though, until last year when I was in High A in Appleton.
Sure.
He threw out the first pitch one day, so I was able to meet him and talk to him, which was really cool. But, yeah, again, he's a legend from my area, and everybody knows him.
Yeah, had a good fastball. He threw a first pitch here a few years ago, and it went right to the backstop. It was very dangerous. That's pretty funny. And speaking of Boston ties, my understanding is the fan who caught your home run ball, your first home run ball, also from Boston. Was he from legitimately in Boston near to where you live? Did you get a chance to talk to him at all?
Yeah, he's from Worcester, which is it's like 40 minutes from Boston. It's a little city outside of it, but he lives here now, but he just grew up there, he said, which I just think is kind of a cool coincidence.
Yeah, that's great. So he didn't even want anything. He was going to give you the ball back straight up.
He threw it right back like as soon as he caught it, and I think he then realized that he probably should have done some bargaining. But I found out and made sure to give him a bat and a ball and some gloves.
That's cool. I'm sure a lot of people have asked about your experience in the World Baseball Classic this past year for Team Italy. You know, obviously, I mean, you guys went on a nice little run, beat Cuba. I know you had a good game for that one. So now that you've had a little bit of distance from that, what resonates? What sticks out about that experience? What did you sort of take away from that?
I think the biggest thing was just playing high caliber baseball. Like, you know, it was really the first time since college where every inning we were just doing anything we could to push runs across and win. It was so highly competitive. No one cared. They went 0-4, 5-4. Like no one cared. Stats were a thing. It was just go out. How could you win a baseball game? And I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. So, earlier this year when this thumb injury happened in April, was it? Did you find out? You must have found out at some point that Garrett Mitchell had gotten hurt that same night. I know that you guys are friends and you guys have played together, obviously, the whole freshman series. But you, on some level, must have known that that could have been an opening for you. So, what was that whole night like? I'm sure your thumb hurt like hell, and that was the first issue. But what was that whole experience like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it stunk. You know, you don't want to get hurt that early in the season, especially what I thought was a big year for me coming in out of spring training. So, I mean, it stunk, and obviously finding out that, you know, Garrett was going down too, and they might need an outfielder. Definitely, you know, aided that sting, but at the same time, I don't know if I was getting called up. You know, I was never told, hey, you're going to be the next guy up. Right. I don't know that, so I never really wanted to speculate, and obviously it was tough, you know, when I found out I had to get surgery, and yeah. I didn't want to just layer things on top of that. I wanted to make sure I was getting healthy and staying positive, so.
Once you came back, did you feel like it still affected you? Maybe not directly, but were there swing changes or anything like that?
No swing change or anything. I mean, I did have to keep my thumb up on the bat for about 3 weeks just because the mobility in there was not coming back as quick as I thought, and I wasn't able to wrap my thumb fully around the bat. But again, I don't think it really affected my swing at all or anything, and the pain wasn't, you know, it was completely gone, so I was ready to go.
By now people know the story. Your family was here and your mom stayed back with the dog. Tell me everything about this dog, because it's become already a mini celebrity.
Yeah, I think my mom was just being her wonderful self and being a mom, and Yeah, it was so late when I found out I was coming up, and my family was in the East Coast, so they were an hour, you know, ahead. It was like 1 o'clock there. They were trying to find flights. There was no flights from Boston and Milwaukee for the next day. There was only like three available to Chicago. Man. So my mom, or my dad, brother, and sister got those, and my mom stayed back with the dog and flew out the next morning. But yeah, it was a mad scramble, but she was out. She's still out, so.
What's it like driving back from O'Hare to Milwaukee knowing you're about to make your major league debut? Because depending on traffic, there's a lot of time to think there.
It was like an hour and a half, so I was chilling. My buddy was with me, my girlfriend, so it was nice. We were keeping it light, but wasn't thinking too much.
Going back in time a little bit again, you were not drafted out of high school, and I wonder if the other sports like football played a role in that, if people weren't sure that you were committed to baseball, or like what were the circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that I played baseball from April to, you know, July. Like I wasn't running around in the summers doing showcases because I was playing seven on sevens and football camp started, and then in the winter too I wasn't going down south to do these showcases because I was, you know, playing hockey. So
right.
And I just also don't think I was, you know, I was an undersized guy, you know, I wasn't hitting balls 400 feet. So I mean, there's a lot of things, but yeah, I think I definitely was like maybe a little late bloomer.
Tell me about the Futures League, because my understanding is during the pandemic, that's where you went back to, and suddenly you were now suddenly playing baseball year-round.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, COVID year, nothing really went off because, obviously, COVID. The Cape League didn't go off, any CBL, nothing.
Yeah.
But the league I had played in, it's just in New England, really. The Futures League went off for, like, the last month and a half of the summer. And
it's a wooden bat league, right?
Wooden bat league. It's a summer league, so it was great. Collegiate league, me and some of my BC buddies played in it, and it was really good because we were able to get at-bats when a lot of guys were, you know, sitting at home on the couch.
All right, so last one. Where is this home run ball going to go? Is it going to go to your parents? Where is it living?
I don't know. It's still in my locker right now, so I haven't really figured that one out. Yeah, so probably send it back home with the parents.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you.